Welcome to another episode of the Fleming Foundation's podcast series, From Under the Rubble. With me today, as on all days, is Dr. Thomas Fleming.
Hello, Rex.
I think we should remind the listeners why you chose the title for these podcasts, From Under the Rubble, and for some of the columns and essays on the Fleming Foundation. Why is that?
Well, I took the title from a famous collection of essays written by Soviet dissidents in the Brezhnev era. Two of the most prominent were Alexander Solzhenitsyn and the great mathematician Shafarevich, whom I once had dinner with in Moscow. Now, these guys, rather than take the conventional approach of the loyal opposition within a communist government, in other words, we've got corruption, inefficiency, incompetence, they criticized the very foundations of the Soviet system, the philosophical roots of Marxism and the moral idea that the government should be controlling the lives and resources of hundreds of millions of people.
You're not making an equation between the communist dictatorship and the Western democracy, are you?
Well, someday I'd be happy to, but that's not my point here. In a famous address that Solzhenitsyn gave at Harvard, he condemned the godless and amoral hedonism that seemed to be the foundation of modern American life. It caused a lot of trouble for him because all the people that had admired him for being a heroic anti-communist, they never understood that he was not just an anti-communist, but he was a Christian moralist. And while I would not say that our system is exactly parallel to the Soviet system, I would insist that both rest on certain false premises about human life that were part of the creed that come down to us from the French Revolution.
Creed of the French Revolution, such as?
Well, the idea of human equality, universal human rights, innate human goodness, the need to spread revolutionary democracy. You know, what Marx took from this, and then Lenin took from Marx, was the need to eliminate monarchy, the social classes, inequities of wealth. What the American radicals have taken was the need to eliminate differences of social class, of course, differences of education, differences of sex and gender, and in other words, everybody has to be fundamentally the same. The Soviets made war on property. We've made war on human nature. I would argue that our American Republic today is more radically anti-human than the Soviet Union was.
Well, there's been a lot of groups, conservative movements that have been tacking that sort of stuff for decades.
That's true, but largely only on the surface, only around the edges. They've been whittling and without conviction. That's why the so-called conservatives in America are like the loyal left-wing socialist opposition in a communist regime. They don't challenge the foundations of the system. They just criticize its operation. When William F. Buckley Jr. started National Review, he held a series of meetings with New York left-wing intellectuals, and he promised them that National Review would be the safe and loyal opposition, and that it would help to eliminate the crazy yahoos out in middle America who thought there was something wrong in the New Deal. He was right. He kept his promise. He never attacked the system itself.
Okay, well, here's a left-right story in the news today. A few days ago, a high school teacher told a student to take off the MAGA hat, you know, Make America Great Again, had the red ones. And when the boy refused to take it off or leave the class, the entire classroom was removed by the teacher, leaving the young guy alone in the room. Conservatives have attacked the teacher, of course, in this and similar cases. They say it's freedom of speech issue, and they cite the First Amendment.
Well, you've brought up an excellent case, actually, one which can illustrate exactly what I've been trying to say.
Okay, so you agree with the MAGA-loving conservatives?
Absolutely not.
Oh, then you're defending the leftist teacher who comes across as smarmy and self-righteous in that video. Have you seen that?
Yes, I've seen the video. No, absolutely not. I have no use for him.
What?
First, the teacher appears to be the knee-jerk leftist that the Republicans have attacked. They don't have to say anything that's not apparent from the indirect way he talks, the gentle voice, his refusal to enter into a rational debate, his sociological gobbledygook. But in fact, his attentions, his character, his ideology are not a significant part of what's at stake.
Oh, well then, what is?
Look, the school has a dress code. The teacher pointed that out. The dress code forbids hats. it's perfectly reasonable to have this in a dress code, especially if the hats or, say, T-shirts have language on them that is potentially divisive. Imagine you were living in central Wisconsin and you walked in with a Bears T-shirt during the football season. This would really distract from the what was the business of the classroom, which is learning, much less anything else. So, for example, there are schools that forbid gang colors. When I was a headmaster, I imposed a similar rule. Nothing, no T-shirts, sweatshirts, anything with words on it, because words can be powerful. We had a sports day one day, and this kid whose nickname was Dub, and he had a T-shirt on saying, "Divers do it deeper."
Oh.
Well, I said, "Dub, I'm sorry, you'll have to go home," and he only lived a half mile away, "go home and change your shirt." And he says, "Why?" I didn't have to explain why.
Right.
So his mother, who was a wonderful woman, but a woman who'd been around the block a few times. In fact, she'd been a barmaid.
Oh.
She was not exactly the most naive person. And she said, "Dr. Fleming, if you see anything wrong in that, you got a dirty mind." And I said, "You know as well as I do what everybody thinks when they see this T-shirt." So it was simply a necessary part of keeping order, and that is what schools have to do.
So you're saying that the school rule takes precedence over the First Amendment? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm saying the Bill of Rights has nothing to do with what goes on in a school, public or private.
Huh.
The First Amendment forbids Congress from passing laws that restrict political speech. It does not forbid states or local communities or schools or private clubs or families from restricting speech, especially non-political speech. What the First Amendment is concerned with, in fact, what the whole Bill of Rights is concerned with, are corporate rights, the rights of states and communities, which they're trying to protect from the Congress of the United States and the federal government.
Hmm.
In other words, the purpose of all those amendments is not to empower individuals by backing up their desire to do something silly with federal marshals. Instead, it's to prevent the federal government from passing rules and sending federal marshals in to enforce them. In other words, our current understanding of the Bill of Rights is exactly opposite to what it was drafted for.
I see.
Schools have a purpose. That is to instruct students.
Okay.
And prepare them to become civilized adults. I wish they would only make an effort at this. Teachers acted in loco parentis. Teachers are acting temporarily as if they were the parents with responsibility for the students. The students have to obey the system in which they are. They're minors.
Mm-hmm.
They are not rational human beings. They don't know one end from another.
No.
There are many proverbs I could quote,
yeah,
but I won't quote any of them.
But what if teachers and principals abuse authority? Because you could see that coming.
Well, first of all, I think, in my view, in almost all American schools, teachers and principals are abusing their authority much or most or all of the time.
Oh.
So then it's time, of course, for the parents to get wise and to go to school board meetings to make sure that the offending staff members are removed, or if it's an offensive student, that he's removed, or a principal. Speaking personally, I would say no parent with a lick of sense or a decent income today, because sometimes income, you know, shortage gets in the way, you shouldn't put children in most public schools in America. It's not safe for their mind or their morals. There are many alternatives. There are private schools, there are religious schools, there's homeschooling.
Yeah, but what about the leftist speech in universities? It seems like they're shutting down that whole conservative view, and there's nothing anybody can do about that.
Well, they certainly are, but let's go to the fundamental question. Do universities and schools, private schools, public schools, do they have the right, I would say the duty, to impose certain restrictions on what you could say, what you could write, how you can behave? This is perfectly justifiable. If they didn't do it, they would be remiss.
Mm.
These are supposed to be places of learning and civil discourse. Insults, race jokes, sex jokes are simply out of place. It's one thing in a locker room or a private dorm room. It's another thing to walk through campus insulting people. Obviously, most universities, probably all universities have gone too far in the political sense of restricting political speech, and all this business about safe zones and all of that. I find all of that ludicrous. And again, if I had my choice, I wouldn't send a child to them. And I would certainly work if I lived in a state with such a school, and I do. I would never vote for anybody who didn't advocate cutting funding to the university. But conservatives are totally wrong in denying schools the right to manage their own affairs. The only alternative to a university coming up with its own speech code is to give that power to the federal government. And the federal government would like nothing better than to tell every one of us what to do all the time.
So the issue is school governance. Even if school policy was wrong in this instance?
Not wrong, necessarily. For example, even if a rule is passed in bad faith, I hate Donald Trump, we're not going to have a MAGA hat.
Okay.
The middle-class Republican kid, in this instance, should have been taught by his parents to take off his hat when he's inside a building and when speaking to ladies. This is just fundamentally one of the most simple rules of decent manners. This kid in the video acted like a self-righteous punk. He's just as prissy and obnoxious and self-righteous as his teacher. Now, this is getting to be a universal problem. Oafs with hats sitting in bars, restaurants, and theaters. I read an article in the Wall Street Journal a couple of years ago. They're having a trouble in high-end expensive bars in Manhattan because men who are well-to-do, got good jobs, they'll come in wearing a hat, often a pretty goofy-looking hat. Okay. And the bartender will say, I'm sorry, sir, but you know we have a rule here. We don't men don't wear hats in the bar. The young man will say, well, it's my signature act. It's part of who I am. It's my identity.
But this type of thing is becoming a social norm. It's been going on for a long time. Hats indoors, pajama bottoms at Walmart, foul language in public places. I've learned to live with it. So what?
If you don't think that society could have any rules that we're not collectively responsible for how we behave, there's nothing trivial about good manners. Complying with the rules, even if the rule is something basic like not spitting on the floor, shows a desire not to offend other people, a desire to be part of society rather than simply showing off. Most men of your age or younger are too busy showing off. They're constantly, wherever they go, I don't care whether it's a shopping mall or a movie theater, they're talking loud, talking dirty, they're crying out, look at me, look at me, hey ma, look at me, I'm somebody. It's no longer possible to go out and spend a couple of $100 on a decent dinner for you and your wife without running into some jackass who's going to ruin the evening. They have to play loud music in bars and restaurants so that everyone has to raise the tone to shout over the ugly music, and this gives them the illusion of excitement. Restaurants are now constructed to be as noisy as possible and to boost the noise level, because when you get a review on Yelp saying it's a high energy place, these are people with small egos that have to be boosted artificially through sound systems and bizarre behavior, take coke, take meth, whatever. Oh. It's what I like to call social Viagra.
Social Viagra. All right, then. Break it down, doctor.
All right. Look. You got two evil things going on here that are in competition.
Mm-hmm.
On the one hand, you've got anarchic individual self-assertion. Hey, I am who I am. Take it or leave it. And then, on the other hand, you have collectivist uniformity imposing in schools and universities and everywhere, so that some poor guy walked into a Starbucks the other day and a woman attacked him on the way out because he was wearing a MAGA hat, screaming at him that he was a Nazi. He said, what, lady, I got a yarmulke under the MAGA hat. I'm Jewish. So they spring from the same revolutionary tradition that first burst forth in the French Revolution.
Oh.
It destroyed religion, it destroys morality, it destroys social norms, it destroys hierarchy of value. Hmm. You're not allowed to say that some things are more important than others, that some things are more beautiful than others.
Hmm.
In the end, this anarchism always leads to the same ending, which is a government crackdown. We can't take this anymore. So all of a sudden, you have a Hitler, some dictator comes along and says, we've got to have order. Normal people agree with me, right? And they grudgingly say, right. In one of my first published pieces, this is quite some time ago, I described the shadow boxing between the leftists with their principles and the conservative Republicans with their principles as two different sides of the same debased coinage, because, you know, our coins aren't worth anything. They're just pieces of monkey metal that they've stamped a number on. That's not value. Whether you choose Marx or Adam Smith or Ayn Rand or Andy Warhol as your anti-Christian guru, you get to the same place. Never forget, hell is paved with bad intentions too, not just good intentions.